Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Brew University Book Club podcast. My name is Jeff Weaver, and I am your host for this roundtable-type discussion with some of our favorite managers from around the company as we work our way through Entree Leadership by Dave Ramsey, the first season of our book club adventure. With me, as always, are my intrepid book club readers, starting with Chris Morgan in Fort Myers. Chris, how's it going?
Very good. Very good.
Glad to have you with us. Dustin Schatz is here as well from Tampa. Hi, Dustin.
How you doing, Jeff?
I'm good. Welcome back. Glad to have you. Suzanne is here from our Tampa offices as well. Hi, Suzanne.
Hey there.
And Lisa Velez, also headquartered out of our Tampa office, but really she's everywhere that inside sales happen. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Glad to have you with us. Thanks for being back. All right. So we are into chapter 5 of Entree Leadership. No magic, no mystery, just all about marketing. Now, this is one of those chapters that is going to be a little unusual for us as leaders inside a company. Remember, this book was written by Dave Ramsey about how he built and grew his business. And so part of that story is really centered around that it was a small team growing up very quickly and doing every part of everything because they were trying to grow a small business into a large business. So as we look at this chapter, I think one of the challenges of chapters like this, and there are a couple like these, is he really gets into some stuff that is, you can tell, more geared towards people that would own and operate their own business. That said, I do still think there's a lot to be taken away from, especially in a business like ours, because as we've talked about in the past, for many of us, and certainly for many of our teams, the way they operate is almost like their own small business. They've got their accounts, they've got their clientele that they call on, they've got their portfolio that they offer, but really they're out there on their own. And so the biggest challenge with chapters like this, I think, is to tie them into what we do. We're not all in the marketing department, right? We've got a marketing department, but we're not all in it. And yet, marketing is something that all of us in one way or another come across. So I'm very excited to hear how you guys took these lessons of marketing and are applying them to your parts of the business. And I'll open it up and just say, first reactions, first thoughts, what are some things that immediately or inherently jumped out at you about this chapter?
I love how he talked about having momentum. And he said, when you have momentum, you actually look better than you actually are. And then conversely, when you don't have momentum, you're actually better than you look. And, you know, I mean, there's nothing more I could really say about that. That's pretty spot on. I mean, we sometimes, when I was playing college baseball, we said you had the glow. Like you had momentum, you looked good. There's nothing you could do wrong. But then when you were in a slump, you couldn't even tie your shoes right. You just, everything about you looked wrong. So I definitely love that statement from him.
I love the whole theorem. I loved that whole focused intensity over time multiplied by God is equal to momentum, to the point that that is like my new mantra in life. Like I loved that whole working of it, you know, because it's such a simple theory that mixed together can really just cause a huge explosion in your group, with your group, you know, and in your life, you know, and it's like, and yeah, that was just, I loved it. And that's so Dave Ramsey, you know, I mean, it really is so Dave Ramsey and, you know, absolutely loved it. Huge fan.
So let's talk about the momentum theorem a bit, because he does start off this chapter quite a bit in this particular topic. And as you mentioned, Lisa, Dave's momentum theorem is a hypothetical math equation that he gives us, which says that focused intensity over time multiplied by God, call it luck, fate, opportunity, whatever, equals an overall momentum. And I think that is a really interesting way to start a chapter on marketing, because what he's really talking about here is the power of habit, the ability to do a thing, do it right, do it consistently over and over again, and that given time and opportunity, that's going to create success. It's brought in this chapter because of the marketing aspect, because marketing has a bit of an alchemy to it. You know, with marketing, it can sometimes be tough to draw a straight line between the things you're doing and the results it gets. And so that's why he brings this up. But I think there are so many things in life that fit this same momentum theorem, that you need focus, you need intensity, you need to do those consistently, and then that plus the right amount of opportunity is going to give you that momentum that you need. Put another way, success is when preparation meets opportunity. And the momentum theorem, that focused intensity over time, is all about preparation, waiting for its blessed moment to turn itself into something that can really propel you forward. And I think here the core is that you've got to get the fundamentals right. You've got to do the fundamentals right all the time. You've got to know what you're focused on. You've got to bring intensity, that repetitious willingness to do it every day and every time. And again, in his instance here, he's talking about marketing. So the willingness to market yourself consistently in the right ways all the time, but it also affects all kinds of habits and behaviors that if you do the right things, do them repetitively, then when the opportunities meet that preparation, you're going to be able to propel yourself forward. I think there's an interesting story that I like to tell that fits this model. So indulge me for just a moment. When I first went out and had come up with the company, I did a lot of ride widths, and one of them was with a sales rep of ours down in the Fort Pierce office. We were stopping off at an account that he had recently started doing a lot of business with. And he, you know, pulls into the parking lot and says, "This is kind of a new account. We're going to go in and check on him real quick, and then I'll come back around to it later." And so we go in and we check on the account, and we got inside, and clearly not a new account. The account had been there for years. So when we left, I asked him, "You know, when you said this was a new account, what did you mean?" He's like, "Oh, this is new for us. The account's been there for decades. It's an old family-run business, but we've only recently started doing business there." I said, "Well, why weren't we doing anything there before?" He said, "Well, when I first took over this route, this account was a complete Budweiser account. And not just in a little bit. I mean, every single piece of beer in there was Budweiser. And because the family that owns the Budweiser distributorship is old family friends with the restaurant owner, they eat there once a week. It's their place. It's like their little local spot. Like, so when I came on, I was told this account is untouchable because it's a Bud account. It's a family thing. You're just never going to get your foot in the door." He said, "But as you can see, there's another account we service here in the parking lot. So every time I would stop into this account once a week to make my sales, I'd walk over to this account that I knew we had nothing in." And the first time he walked in there, he said he went and found the owner and he introduced himself and said, "I know we have nothing in here and I know you're not looking to put anything in, but I'm going to stop here every week anyway. And I'm going to ask you if you need anything. And you can tell me no every single week, and I don't care. I'm still going to stop by and ask if you need something, because someday you will, and I want to be ready." And for 3 years, he had been doing exactly that, going into that account once a week that he knew he had no business in and asking if they needed anything. And every week for 3 years, he'd gotten rejected. Until one week when the owner said, "If I can give you everything, all my tap handles, all my cooler space, can you get all of it refilled tomorrow? I want to yank Budweiser out overnight." And the answer was yes. That's exactly why we do hot shots and off-day deliveries. And we did. And he has been almost exclusive in that account ever since. What happened was the quality of service from the Budweiser distributor had consistently been going downhill. They were taking this account for granted. And because it was a place that the owner frequented, he felt like he should have had a better relationship. So he was saying to him when he would come in for dinner, "Look around, look, what your guys are not getting stuff done." And he was given promises, but never delivered. And so what happened? An opportunity came, a moment came. And this rep's focused intensity of having been in that account every week, despite being told no over and over again, turned into an instant where he could make momentum happen that has now propelled us into having a really strong presence in a really top-notch account in the area. So when I read the momentum theorem, I immediately remembered this story because I think it speaks to exactly that. You do the things right every week, every time, and eventually the opportunity is going to come right into your way to propel you forward. And I'm guessing you guys have probably heard similar stories over the years from other places.
Oh yeah. Anytime I bring on a new team member in sales, I always tell them, I always say to them, every time you go to account X, Y, or Z, go in there with this intensity that you're going to ask them for such and such products. And they're going to say, "No, not this week." And the next week you go in there and go, "I know you told me last week, not this week, but this is a different week." And then they're going to say, I'll get back to you. And you're going to stick in that person's head if you constantly do that. Kind of similar to your story, Jeff. But you constantly come in there with this intensity, this smile, and you're so excited about these products. They just have to take that intensity and that excitement from you. And then eventually, they bring that stuff in. So that kind of thing in sales happens all the time, all the time. Maybe not even to that degree of 3 years. And that's intense. But...
Fo focused intensity over time eventually gets its opportunity. Absolutely. Anybody else thoughts on that one?
I think it relates to the delivery side as well, not just sales. You know, being able to just continuously provide good customer service every single delivery goes a long ways on the sales side and on the delivery side. So just building that relationship by continued focused intensity.
Never confuse simple for easy, right?
Absolutely.
It's not hard to be good at customer service. It's hard to do it 15 times a day, 150 times a week, and, you know, 17,000 accounts every day all year long. That's John Taylor's old favorite. It's not hard to flip a coin, but try flipping a coin 17,000 times in a row with no drops. That's what we're expected to do. And if you're a rep or a driver or anybody that deals with the customers, that's the challenge. It's not that it's hard to be good at customer service. It's that it's hard to be good at it every single time, that focused intensity with consistency. But the payoff is that eventually the moment comes and you're propelled forward in those moments.
It goes back to slow and steady wins the race. And that's kind of the culmination of focused intensity over time. It's slow and steady wins the race. Just don't take your foot off the gas. Just keep moving forward. And, you know, good things happen. So you catch the momentum.
And I even like, you know, I'm mentioned sports earlier, but he talked about I think it was an NFL wide receiver that he talked to, who he asked him, why do you drop the ball? And, he said the first reason that people or NFL players have things like that as they lose focus is because of fear. Mm-hmm. They have fear of getting hit, they have fear of getting hurt. And then he said the second reason is that you lose focus is because of greed, because you're like, oh, as soon as I catch this, I'm gonna score. And I think that relates to the same thing with what we do. It's, you know, we lose focus because of obviously fear. And then again, we get greedy. We say, okay, similar to your Budweiser story. Oh, we know we had this already, so we don't really have to do much work. And then you lost all that focus. And then here we came in and took it over. So
couldn't agree with you more. Couldn't agree with you more, Chris. I think it's tough. And I think it's tough to have focused intensity when you've got 100 suppliers in the portfolio. You know, and that's certainly something that we hear sometimes from our suppliers. But I think even, you know, we have to realize that focused intensity can be hard just by virtue of how much we have going on any given day at any given time. And so the challenge is, what are you going to focus on? And can you narrow that focus at the times it needs to be in order to have that intensity? Because otherwise, when you have too much to focus on, the intensity becomes difficult. But every idea has its time. Sometimes a good idea isn't ready yet. And sometimes a good idea just needs its moment. And I read that part and I was immediately thinking about what we're doing today, which is our podcasting. I've had this podcasting idea sitting on the shelf, as it were, for years. I've talked about wanting to get into podcasting for years. And every year I look at the landscape of what we have to do in training and what's going on in the company. And I think, can we do podcasting this year? And the answer was no, 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 no. Until coronavirus said, okay, you got to find a way to connect with people from a distance. Podcasting found its moment. And we're able to finally do something. I have had a focused intensity on this for 4 years and we're finally getting it done. But sometimes that moment is part of it. If you've lost focus, if you give up on the idea too soon, that can kill it. But if you push it before it's time, that can kill it as well. So I thought it was interesting, as he talked about, that ideas have their time and you can't let bad timing ruin good ideas, because some things are just too early. And sometimes if we lose that focus intensity, we're too late to the party.
Very similar to where we are with EO Market. You know, EO Market came out a few years ago and it really wasn't, the time wasn't right. And now the time is here to make that happen or to help that move along, you know. And it's not that it's easy and it's not that it's falling through in place, you know, but I think customers are much more receptive to the idea of EO Market now than they were, you know, before the coronavirus hit, you know. So it's like,
I also think it's interesting too, how important it is to continue to talk to your team about the momentum, because you may have new people. And he talks about where this theorem came that he made was for the new people on the team that hadn't seen him over years and years and years trying to get on Oprah. Well, all of a sudden, you know, it happened for them. They're like, yay. They don't realize the time and energy that you've put into something. And maybe, you know, you're inching along, but to you, it's been 6 years, you've come a long way. But to them, it's like, well, big deal, you're on Oprah, you know? I mean, so I think it's huge to really bring the newbies in on the hard work from an account standpoint, you know, and how important I think Jeff's story is for, I mean, this account was put time and energy for 3 years and finally it happened. So really celebrating those successes and helping the new people understand how far we've actually come.
I think that is such a great point. You know, there's a phrase in Hollywood called an overnight success, 7 years in the making. And I always think about Kelly Clarkson got famous for being on American Idol and winning the first season of American Idol. She'd had 3 record contracts in Nashville before that come and go. 3 times she'd been signed to labels and been dropped by labels. She'd been in Nashville for like 7 or 8 years trying to get a career upstart and kept getting told no or hitting the wall or not being able to make it happen. All of a sudden she gets on Idol and becomes one of the biggest selling artists in America. And everybody's like, they found this girl from obscurity. They plucked her out of the line in the you know, run up to American Idol and turned her into a superstar. It's like, no, turns out she'd been working really hard at this for a really long time. And this turned into a moment. But again, that success happens when preparation meets opportunity. We recognize the opportunity moments because they turn into that big momentum gains. But Suzanne, you couldn't be more right. They never see all the work that went into being ready to take on that moment. And how many people have missed their moment because they weren't prepared when it happened? And how many people never get to understand the months, the sometimes years of preparation that led to when that moment was there, they were ready to make it happen? I think that is a really important part of what he talks about here, is that you can't just do these things some of the time. You have to have that ongoing focused intensity. And it's important to explain that, especially to our teams, that as they come on board, they're taking over accounts that often we've had relationships with for 10, 15, 17, 20 years in some of our markets we've been in. You know, and some even longer than that. You're taking over an account relationship between two companies that have done business forever. You need to understand the history of that. What a great point. Thank you for bringing that in. So let's talk a little bit about the customer funnel and that concept, because I think, again, you know, he's talking about in marketing terms, it's a marketing idea, the customer funnel, and the idea of bringing customers in small and then growing them over time. Our work is a little different, but I think there's some ways that maybe that could apply. When you read the customer funnel stuff, what stuck out and what did you think about it?
I can tell you that with inside sales, when I was, and I spent more time out at retail, especially more before coronavirus, but there's so many new accounts. I mean, we get new accounts opening up left and right. Dustin can tell you. And it's like, and a lot of these accounts want to come in and they're trying to compete against, you know, other mom and pops or other nationally known chains in, you know, sometimes within a mile of where they may be located at. And, you know, trying to get people into the door is important. And the only way that you can, you know, I mean, with the pour the customer through the funnel section, I kept thinking about some of these small mom and pops that wanted to charge, you know, such a dollar amount. And, you know, and instead of just kind of, hey, like, let's do like a welcome to the neighborhood or, you know, something to the kind of make you bring people in slowly, bring people in slowly and kind of help guide them to where they want to be, where you're at, to spend more money there, you know. But yeah, I mean, this would be a great book for any person that's trying to open up their mom and pop business, whether it's a convenience store or whether it's a small bar and restaurant.
I thought the same thing, Lisa, because that happens with obviously with us all the time. We will have a convenience store that'll open up right in the middle of 3 national chain stores and want to be the highest priced store in town. Yeah. And I'm like, well, you've got to be able to bring all these people in first, because like the funnel, you want to have a big pot to start with. And it'll shrink down and hopefully you can get to those few people that are still coming back all the time. And I thought the same exact thing you thought. I was like, why not be welcoming to the neighborhood, be more of a neighborhood store? Maybe you don't start off making, you know, 40% margin right on a 6-pack. Maybe you want to lower that margin down and get these people to walk in the door, see how beautiful your store is, see how friendly you guys are. I thought it's the same exact thing that you thought about.
I think one of the things that struck me in thinking about this is because, you know, we've been on a kick, especially the last few years around here, about, you know, looking at cost per stop and trying to hit more delivery efficiencies. And it sort of almost seems inverse to the idea of the client funnel, right? That you start them off small and grow them up big. And say, yeah, well, we're trying not to have to go to places for one line or for one set of stops as much as possible. But at the same time, I take that because, again, this book builds on itself. If we think about our last chapter about giving the right decision the right amount of time, I sometimes wonder if there's not an opportunity to sit there and say, you know, maybe part of our funnel is to have time limits by which customers have to grow to a certain level, and then we can continue to, you know, set goals for them bit by bit. Maybe we put too much of an expectation on an early account that we want them to be big enough right from the start. And could we maybe give them that 90-day ramp up or that 6-month ramp up? And so something to think about with your teams and whatnot is when you're growing an idea like that, again, how do I make this work first and then over time make it work better? A quote that I've always loved in this realm is, without the pressure to be perfect, we're free to become extraordinary. And I think there is that tendency to want to say, we want it to be perfect right off the bat. We want the first time in to get everything. We want to go into that account that's opening up. We want all the prime positions and all the good tap handles. But maybe what we can do is instead make sure that we've got a solid in relationship, even at 50% or even a little less than, if it means that we're going to be able to demonstrate over time that we're the better option and move the business in a certain direction. So as we're putting in our plans, I think there's often that decision, you know, that want to say, we want to go in and win up front. And that's great if we can. But I think there's value in winning partially, at least at first, and then growing it up over time and taking big goals and chunking them down into those smaller parts that we can do step by step and not having to take it all in at one time.
I love it. I mean, because it's hard, especially because I get all the new accounts. So they come and, you know, they're automatically pretty much assigned to me. And it is kind of, you know, hard. I am a customer service. I've been in sales since I feel like forever, even before JJ Taylor. And it's like you want these small accounts to succeed, you know, and you want to be able to arm them with as much support as possible in the market to help them, you know, get to that spot, you know. But yeah, it's like, you know, I mean, when we have all new accounts and we're opening them up and here's your schedule and, you know, sometimes, you know, I feel we could fall a little flat here and there. But with that being stated, we also have ways to go about trying to get them deliveries in between their schedule, you know. So it's like, you know, we work with what we have and we do a pretty good job at it, you know.
I knew Lisa would love that idea, but it does put you at a quandary at times. It's do we give them that more time and be a little less efficient by giving them that time? Or, you know, just kind of, it's something good to think about. It's definitely put some thought into.
Absolutely. Listen, I am the proud chain account manager of Cracker Barrel. So when we got all, I think it's 21 of them now, you know, or 18 of them or something like that. You know, I mean, honestly, it makes sense to put them on an every 3-week cycle, you know, and that is that, you know, it's, there really is no, if ands or buts about that, you know. I mean, mind you, if you may have that one Cracker Barrel that might do something, then you make the adjustment, you know, to where you need to be. But I'm pretty sure they're all going to stay every 3 weeks.
And now I know Cracker Barrel sells beer.
Exactly. I was thinking the same thing. Like, well, they sold.
Which is clearly how they ended up on Lisa's desk, because I didn't even know that was a thing. That is going to change hash brown casserole forever, by the way. So one last thought that I want to touch on in this chapter is he talks about the marketing stew at the end. And I think that's such a great analogy when you're talking about things that are successful by sort of that alchemy approach, where no one thing in the recipe by itself is going to work. And it's really the combination of all the right ingredients over time that turns it into something special at the end. What a brilliant little idea for how to explain this kind of approach, where if you only focus on one thing in this recipe, it's not going to work. And if you don't do them all consistently and let them simmer, it's not going to work. But if you put it all in there and let it simmer the right amount of time, you end up with something delicious. The marketing stew was a really great analogy, but I'm curious if you guys had thoughts on it, or if there are other stews like that sort of exist in our world, where you kind of have to, again, take all the right ingredients, throw them in a pot, and do it over time in order to get the right answer.
He brings in passion here again. And I think obviously it's the number one ingredient on there, but I mean, it's the whole theorem again, but then bringing in passion together, you know, it's all, like you said, it's all of the aspects. And I think passion is so important. I don't know how many people have, you know, friends who do MLMs and stuff, and they just fall flat until someone is really pushing something that they have passion about. And I think for us, obviously, beer is something that people are passionate about. So it can be easy to sell beer, but I think that passion piece is so important.
And just to piggyback on the passion, I mean, it's surprising the amount of passion a lot of our sales reps have, and a lot of them don't even drink, but they're just so passionate about, you know, the company and wanting to do well, that that passion exudes them, and they go out to their accounts, and their accounts, they love that energy, and they take that on, and they say, oh yeah, if you believe in that, I believe in it. And then they'll take on brands that we bring in. And so, yeah, I agree with you. The passion part about it is huge.
And to kind of cover up with that, you know, activity too, is just another thing. You can be passionate about something all day long, but if you're not actually taking active moves to help grow your brands or grow your market share in an account, then, you know, I think it's more activity is an insurance against failure is something that Dave Ramsey had posted or wrote in his book. And it's the truth. You know, you can be passionate about something. Absolutely. But throw some activity on there and move the needle, you know? And yeah, that's pretty, those are pretty important ingredients to have.
Yeah, I think we can look at our teams that we build around us as a stew. You know, obviously nothing happens overnight, so you have to kind of put your team together. You have to mold them. You know, they need to simmer over time. They need to develop and learn. And that's a way for, you know, us to have a successful team is obviously to have a delicious stew at the end.
Oh, Dustin, I love that so much. That is so right. Talk about taking a whole bunch of very different ingredients and throwing them in the pot together. But given time, they can turn into something better than their individual parts and something really special. I think that's such a great analogy, is that our people are our stew as well. Well, again, you know, this is one of those chapters that it's really aimed at people who are maybe running more of their own business. But I still, as we've seen, there's a lot to be taken away from, even in a chapter like this, because, you know, momentum theorem and the stew of how things come together are still parts that are absolutely essential to our business. And because what we do is often the marketing on behalf of our suppliers and our breweries, we've got to have that same passion and enthusiasm and understanding of what makes a good marketing approach for them as it does for us. And more importantly than anything else, I think following that momentum theorem, focused intensity over time with opportunity, creating momentum, do the right things, do them with passion, do them with excellence, do them consistently every day. And the moments will come when you will be able to just leap forward with that. And so very excited, that we were able to get so much out of a chapter that wasn't even really aimed at us in the first place. Good job, team. Way to go, bookies. I am impressed. All right. Well, with that, we will wrap up this episode of the Brew University Book Club podcast. So thank you again for joining us, one and all. Chris, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. Suzanne, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jeff.
My treat. Dustin, glad to have you with us.
Thanks again, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Always. And Lisa, thanks for being a part of it.
Oh, awesome. Thank you.
All right. We'll be back again next week with the next chapter of Entree Leadership in season 1 of our Brew University Book Club. Until then, we'll see you next time and happy New Year.